Hello, I'm your host, Aaron Rittmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight for Diz Dad's podcast number 490 for Sunday, April 9th, 2017, are James Cameron.
Hey, everybody.
Brad Coates.
Greetings.
And Chad King.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
Now, tonight, we're going to be looking at the best of the value-added experiences at Disney Parks and Resorts. But before we get into that discussion, I do want to take a moment and thank our sponsor, Fantastic Memories Travel, and the Mouse Master Travel Group. The Mouse Master Travel Group focuses on Disney destination vacations, and Mouse Master agents would love to take care of the stressful parts of vacation planning so that you can focus on the fun. You can check them out at mousemastertravel.com. Okay, gentlemen, so value-added experiences. What are we really talking about here, James, when we say value-added Disney experiences?
We're talking about things that Disney will gladly take more of your money for in order to, and you know, give you and a little bit of extra magic, or at least... That's what they sell you. Of whether or not you actually get something extra out of it is debatable. You know, I think that's why we're going to talk about is, you know, which ones could be worth it and which ones aren't.
Okay. So basically these are all things that there's an upcharge for it of some sort, and it's usually an extension of an existing offering. It's usually not something totally different. So, for example, we wouldn't consider your basic dining reservation to be a value-added experience, although it is something you pay extra for and that you don't have to buy if you don't want it. On the other hand, you know, the here's an example that maybe will come up during the discussion itself, because it's a relatively new one. You can now, when you purchase the, they've now done tiered seating for the Mickey's Backyard Barbecue, which they didn't used to have. And with the new tiered seating, if you buy the slightly higher tier, you get in earlier and you have some private meet and greet time with the characters before the regularly scheduled meal. Right. So you pay a little extra and you get a little extra something for it. But the underlying experience that is related to this thing you're paying for is still, you know, more generally available. Make sense?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So I think we've all experienced some of these and at various Disney destinations. So it should be interesting to see kind of what we come up with. Let's see, Brad, why don't you get us rolling with one of your favorite of the value-added Disney experiences?
Well, I'm going to kind of take the Disneyland side of it, since I'm kind of the one that has done Disneyland more than a lot of the other guys. I think one of my all-time favorites over the last few years was the recently added, well, about a year ago now, they added the World of Color Dessert Party.
Okay, so talk about why you think that World of Color Dessert Party, you know, fits in among the best value-added experiences, because it's not an inexpensive experience.
You know, in fact, that's the hard part of it, is when you start talking value, it's like, well, it's not because it was cheap. $79 a person, whether you're an adult or a child.
Yeah.
So, and I've done the dessert party. I've done the Fantasmic dessert party there at Disneyland. I've done multiple dessert parties at Disney World. I tend to like to do those things because I don't mind paying a little bit extra for the value that goes beyond the food. And that's the seating, the location, the ability to see a show or experience one of the events. What was great about World of Color is if you haven't ever been to World of Color in Disneyland, here's the heads up. There is no seating, and you can't sit on the ground and watch it like you can Fantasmic there in Disneyland. You have to stand, and you have to stand the entire time. And where you get herded into areas based on what color of a fast pass you got. And even if you get the premier one, I paid like $250 for lunch one time for my family of four. so that we could get in the premium seating area and still was behind so many heads I could barely see the show. So it was like, okay, I'm really glad I spent this money.
Okay, so there's an example, right? Those are both value-add experiences.
Yep.
And at first glance, it might look like the better option is the full meal.
But, right.
You know, you're paying for the full meal. It's a good meal, but...
Yeah, it was an excellent meal, but...
But the you know, value add to the experience itself, to the underlying experience, which was World of Color, was better from the dessert party.
And far better, because the dessert party is the only place where you can, other than if you're handicapped and there's a handicapped area where you have to sit, where you actually get to go in. They have put these tables. There's some normal height tables and then some bar type tables, the high tops.
Right.
And they're on an elevated section that's fairly close to the middle. And you go, you get to go in and you get to sit down the entire show. And you are literally a heads above the entire crowd that's in front of you. You're not at the front, which isn't a bad thing at World of Color because you can get very wet at the front.
Not right, always so a fun experience. That's the double bonus, right? You're out of the splash zone, but above the height of most people's heads. And so you really can see everything without, you know, getting...
There was literally only one guy that blocked my view even a tiny bit. And it was because this guy was a stud because he basically put his 8 or 9 year old son on his shoulders.
Oy.
Yeah, exactly. The dude was like eight feet. No, he was down in front of the crowd.
He was in front, so it made him like 8 feet tall.
Yeah, I was like, okay, well, I thought nobody could block my view, but you found a way, pal. but I had to applaud him because he didn't look like he was rushed to the hospital afterwards, so he did pretty good. But actually, he didn't last the whole show. So it was a great view. The dessert party was one of the better ones I've ever been to. The desserts were real good. They had some not just desserts, but they had some cheeses and fruits. They served nonstop hot chocolate and coffees and sodas. They actually served out alcoholic drinks. And so for $79 to have probably the best dessert party I've ever done and have by far the best World of Color. I won't ever go and see World of Color again without just forking out the money because
value-added experience, because there are a lot of these that I think you'll hear us say, you know, it was definitely worth doing once, but once you've done it, you don't necessarily need to repeat it. So that's a really, truly high praise.
Yeah, and it's all about whether you love World of Color, but I love it, and I experience it every time, and it was just so much of a better experience. So, yep.
All right, so Chad, what's an example of another value-added experience that you feel like, you know, legitimately added value to what you were doing?
Man, you got me hopping all over the place and what I want to go first, but I think that the one I will say that I think is one of the ones that we really enjoyed for the value was the pirate fireworks cruise at Magic Kingdom in Orlando. And a brief kind of setup of what it is, you know, you meet at the Contemporary Resort where they have a dessert bar, lots of desserts, really nice setup in one of the conference rooms, at least where we did it. Then you take you down to the lagoon and they put everybody on kind of one of the medium sized boats, like, you know, not the biggest boat, but not the little one that goes to Poly and Grand Floridian. And you know, you've got some pirate hosts telling bad pirate jokes and playing music on the boat. And then they kind of tour the lagoon in the boat for a little while. And then you kind of line up right in front of the Magic Kingdom and have a beautiful view of the fireworks. They have the music and all the sound effects playing on the boat. So you get all that, plus you're in the middle of the lagoon right in front of Magic Kingdom to watch the fireworks. Obviously, you miss out on some of the stuff they've added in the last year or so of projections on the buildings because you are out in the middle of the lake. But it was great. And then they take you back to the Contemporary. The time we did it, there were some special guests that met us at the end of the tour. So you can, you know, bring your camera and autograph book. And The only thing I would caution people is it does get a little late because you're out on the lagoon until the end of the fireworks. So then they have to take you back. They have to unload and you have to get, you know, the meet and greet. So it's probably 45 minutes to an hour after the fireworks before you're even headed back to your hotel. But that's one where we did, which I think was definitely worth it. I don't say it was worth every trip, but I definitely say that's in the do it once, maybe two or three times is good.
Well, yeah, and I would say that among the various fireworks cruises, you know, that one in particular gets the most consistently positive feedback. I don't think I've heard anybody say that they didn't feel like they got, you know, full value out of that experience. And yeah, it's late, but the trade-off is, and this is my favorite part of the trade-off, I think, when the fireworks are over, you're not in the middle of the crowd in the middle of Magic Kingdom.
No, you're in the middle of the lagoon.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know, you're spending 45 minutes meeting and greeting with characters, but, you know, they're spending 45 minutes trying to fight their way down Main Street. So it's a pretty decent trade-off.
No, absolutely. And, it, you know, if you're staying at Contemporary, you know, hey, you just get off do the meet and greet and go right back to bed, you know.
That's true.
Unfortunately, if you're going any place else, you have to make your way to a different transportation. But again, that wasn't hard. It's just, you know, it's just timing. Just remember that when you're looking into that, it takes a little bit of time to get back. So
sure. Yeah. Especially if you've got to go to another resort from the Contemporary and you've got to cross back towards Magic Kingdom against the flow. And that's a little tricky.
Absolutely.
So it's a good example and a different kind of example. So we've gotten one Disneyland, one Walt Disney World experience. James, what do you have for us?
Oh, already have to cross two of the things off my list, you know, because the dessert parties are one of our favorite things to do. And the Pirates and Pals was a great experience for us the one time we did it. All right, I'm gonna go here. Something we've done twice as a value added experience, and I think the argument can be made that it's worth it is the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique.
That's an interesting choice, and talk to us about, you know, what you think qualifies it as a worthwhile value added experience as opposed to just a shopping trip.
For me, I think, you know, with the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, you have different levels. So, you know, the value is tied to how much you're spending. And I think if you're not splurging, if you do it smartly and you get your own, you know, dress, you get your own princess gown, and you bring it with you and you don't have to, you know, splurge for that $200 level, and you could do it for, the $60 level. Sure. I think it really, really makes it special. And it's not about, you know, the dress so much as the experience of being, you know, if you do it in the park, you in Cinderella Castle, you go in there and you get your child to go into Cinderella Castle and have their own fairy godmother who's attending to them and they're getting made up. You know, for our daughter, it was an unbelievable experience. Like the smile on her face was, you know, was ear to ear the entire time. You know, it was such like a grown up thing for her. Something she doesn't, you know, she never gets that. And to have it, you know, on top of that, to have it be done in the Magic Kingdom, in Cinderella Castle, with all, you know, the fanfare that goes into it, the photo shoot afterwards, and then being able to walk around the rest of the day and have all the different cast members you run into greet her like an actual princess, which happens, you know, everywhere you go, inside the park or out. I mean, that just made, you know, the entire day. And I think that was worth the money.
That's a great point. And I think you make a good point about, you know, making the value-added experience a better value with something simple like bringing your own dress. There's nothing wrong with that. And one of the things that is maybe a little ironic is, you know, although I think they've gotten a little better with the quality of the dresses they sell in the store, I find that a lot of folks feel like they get better quality by purchasing from Etsy or someplace like that, where you get people who are sort of, you know, semi-pro costumers who make dresses, and especially the littlest kids find them a lot more comfortable because the ones in the store tend to be that nylon stuff, And yeah. I'm telling you, you know,
scratchy nylon.
Yeah, you put a 7-year-old girl, a 6-year-old girl in a nylon dress in July. It's just not going to be fun after a while.
And I would add to that too, because when my girls were little, I remember the first time we did, it was the first year they came out with Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, and we went ahead and did it, and then they kept saying they wanted to go in the park in their dresses. I thought, that is dumb. You guys are going to be miserable. But it wasn't just cast members. But everybody in the parades, all the princesses find my spot my kids and wave them. And then even strangers would come up and ask Cinderella for a picture. And we had some Orientals that were following us. They couldn't talk English, but they would try to do like almost – that was back before selfies were selfies. But they'd have somebody take a picture. They'd run up and try to get their face in the picture with my daughter. And my daughter would go, oh, Dad, just wait. They need a picture. And she'd turn around and smile for them, you know. But from then on, we did it every year. I mean, it's not just the cast members. Everybody notices them and definitely makes it valuable.
Sure, sure. It's a great example. Well, I think I'm going to go back to another dessert party for one of my favorite value-added Walt Disney World experiences. And that's the current, well, now see, I got to second guess myself already. I'm going to call it anyway, the Galactic Spectacular dessert party at Hollywood Studios. Even, I guess, is what I'll put it, in its current iteration. For folks who sort of haven't followed the evolution of the Galactic Spectacular, I believe we're on version like 3.5 of the show. And as the show has changed, they've also changed some of the sort of pieces that go around it, one of which is this dessert party. The first time I did this dessert party, they were doing the dessert party, that part of it outdoors, kind of just to the, if you're facing the theater, just to the left of center, they had the whole thing set up. And that I really liked because they had plenty of space. They could really, you could spread it out a little bit. And the kids could go to the kind of dance party that they would do sort of spontaneously in front of the stage just before kind of waiting for the show. So if they got bored with standing around the tables with dessert and drinks, they could entertain themselves and come right back to us. That was, I think, what I liked best about it. The newest version, I think it lost a little bit because what they've done is move it indoors into the launch bay. And I get why they did it. I know I'm sure that they have far fewer cancellations because of weather as a result, and far fewer guest complaints from people who spent money for this thing and then, you know, had to try to enjoy their drinks and desserts in the drizzle, as I'm sure happens in Orlando. But it is, you know, it's a little tighter. It's not as free-flowing, so it does feel a bit cramped, especially around the dessert tables. They don't quite have as many dessert selections available just because they don't have the space to put them out. They have tried to bring the characters into it a little bit more, with mixed success. But to me, the real key to it is that it's not as expensive as the World of Color dessert party. It's not inexpensive, but I think you do get good value in terms of the food and drink that you get for it. And you get a couple little extras. You get led back out to the viewing area by the Stormtrooper battalion, which is, they could do a better job of making that part a little more interactive instead of sending out the Stormtroopers in front of everyone. But in any case, you're still kind of, you feel a little bit like you're part of the show a bit. And they have, you know, at various times brought characters through. Some of it, I think, just depends on how crowded the party is, because it's hard to maneuver characters through that space when it's crowded. But the bottom line is that you end up with a viewing area for that show that is dead center right in front of the stage. And with that show, it makes a difference. The combination of the lighting effects and the projection effects with the fireworks being right up front and center, it just makes it my favorite fireworks show at Walt Disney World currently. I absolutely love that show, and that dessert party is a big reason why. So it makes it hard not to do the dessert party now.
Agreed.
Maybe if I hadn't experienced it already, I might be able to say it's too expensive, but So that's you know, one round, all positive experiences. Let's see if we can come up with another round of positives. And maybe we'll talk a little bit here, too, about some that are maybe, you know, more hype than value, too. Let's see. Let's work our way the other direction a little bit. So, Chad, get us started in one way or the other, right? Either a suggestion for another good positive experience, or maybe a start us on a round of more hype than value. Up to you.
Oh, let's stay positive. So we went for dessert party. How about I switch you up and go to breakfast? And I don't think they did this last year, so they've had it several times, is the Parisian breakfast at the Food and Wine Fest. But if I remember correctly, they didn't do it last year, and I don't know if it's gone completely, but it was really...
those kind of events, I don't think there is any such thing. Those things just kind of come and go, and it depends on everything from who's available from their stable of, you know, people who run these things to what spaces are available to them and things like that.
Okay, so it may come back, but we really enjoyed it. The way they did it is they had, you know, everybody that had registered for the breakfast met at the bridge crossing over towards France. And I think it was like 8 a.m. and, you know, that part of the country those countries usually don't open until 10 or 11, even at Food and Wine Fest time. So, but they had everybody there. Then they led us to the Parisian restaurant and they had a nice spread of pastries, unlimited coffee and unlimited mimosas. And it was just, you know, a little different take on that French restaurant, which is usually only open for lunch and dinner because that half of the park's usually only open for lunch and dinner. So, and it was, you know, great service and it was all included. So you pre-registered and paid a price and I've forgotten what it was, but you got all of that stuff included, and it was a nice little breakfast. And then, you know, by the time you were done, the rest of the countries are open, and now you're doing Food and Wine Fest. So
that's a nice little event. And what I like about it so much is that, number one, France does such tremendous pastries in Les Halles anyway. So to couple that with the other sort of additions, you know, that's my kind of breakfast. And then it does. It just leads so logically into a day devoted to Food and Wine Festival. That's great. So staying positive then, James, what is another good example of a good value, added value experience?
All right. Here's one that we got good value out of when it was first introduced, and then we stopped doing it because we didn't see the value anymore. But now I think it's a good value again. Okay. And that's the Fantasmic Dining Package.
Oh, okay. So talk about why you went back and forth on it, because I think this is an interesting issue.
Well, when it was first introduced, you know, like Fantasmic, you had to, you know, be there like 2 hours ahead of time, you know, to get in and get a seat. Right. You try to show up, you know, right before the show started, and you were, you know, standing room only in the back, and it was miserable. Then they introduced the dining package, which allowed you to have reserved seating, which was awesome. And all you had to do was, you know, eat at one of the restaurants, and you paid like a little bit more. Then you had, you know, and I think in the beginning, the menu was kind of limited. You could only pick like certain things, and if I'm remembering correctly. But it was still worth it to not have to wait that 2 hours in line. You could do other things in the park, and you would just show up and you would go in and find your seat and see the show. And it was great. And then along came FastPass, and they gave and people were able to reserve, you know, seats for Fantasmic with FastPass. And not only did that save you the trouble of spending all the money in the dining, but the FastPass seats were also better. The FastPass section was in the middle. And the dine and your dining package sat you all the way to the right, to the end, and it wasn't the best viewing. And then what they do is then recently we went and we opted, you know, we got our fast passes for Fantasmic, and we show up and we find out that they switched everything, and now fast pass was all the way on the left and the dining package seats were in the middle, and now the dining package is totally worth it again.
Right.
Because now you don't have to wait and you get the best seats.
So yeah, so that's the real key, right? Is that what makes that value add valuable is the point of the value add, right? Is the fact that the view for the show has gotten much better than it was previously, you know, when they first brought FastPass to the Fantasmic show. And I think another piece of that too is that now that they're running two different shows at Hollywood Studios, I think it's even more important that you've got the you know, seating for Fantasmic that's reserved like that, because, you know, it's almost impossible to get a great view for both shows because the Galactic Spectacular happens so close in time after Fantasmic most nights. And so at least with the dinner package, you get that really great view for Fantasmic, and that way it makes it a little easier to live with. Yes, you can catch the Galactic Spectacular show, but it's probably not going to be the best view.
Yeah, usually lucky you just you make it back out to somewhere by the time it's starting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I want to go actually back to California for a value-added experience, and this is one that it almost goes under the category of you know, infinite value in some ways. And this is the frozen lunch packages at Carthay Circle. And it's, on the one hand, kind of absurd, you know, that you pay this inflated, you know, price for a special lunch. But they're only doing like three shows of this Fantasmic or this frozen stage show a day. And people are lining up for a stage show a minimum of a half hour in advance to get a standby, you know, seat at the show of any kind, let alone a preferred seat. And they've stopped distributing FastPass for it, if I remember correctly. So in a lot of ways, unless you either have lots of days to spend in the parks in California, and I know that a lot of folks kind of tend to take advantage of the fact that it's, you know, everything in California is all sort of closer together and there's less space in between. And I think people tend to kind of adopt that same philosophy to their ticket days. So they figure since we can, you know, get to all these things rather quickly, we can do the whole thing in you know, 3 days instead of 6 days or whatever. So if you don't have a lot of extra days, you end up spending an awfully lot of time just getting in to see that Frozen show if you don't do this lunch package. And I mean, it helps that they do it at a good restaurant that does consistently good food. So that makes it worthwhile. But the bottom line is it's worthwhile because it's the only way to guarantee a good seat at the Frozen show.
You know what? I completely forgot about that. I have some folks out there right now. I didn't even think about that to help them get in. Because you're right, they are not doing the fast passes.
Yeah.
We kind of thought they might start them back up during the holidays and when things got busy in the summer and stuff, but they actually didn't.
Yeah.
So it's just, they've never started them back up. And I having been one who stood in that fast pass line, the longest line in the history, other than the day they opened up Cars Land, maybe, when you were out front. I mean, it literally went for thousands of people lined up. I mean, it was crazy. Man, that would definitely be good. One good thing I will tell you about Frozen is, though, there's almost not a bad seat in the house. About the only bad seat is if you get up too close. But yeah, that's a good value add.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the biggest thing for that is the waiting. It's
yeah, exactly.
It's not a shaded queue, and it's just a tough wait.
It is.
All right.
Many a time waiting for Aladdin and Carthay and Frozen. So,
right.
Woohoo!
Well, so Brad, it's your turn anyway. So what's another value add positive experience that you would suggest?
Well, I'll let you guess. It's one we shared when we were at the convention.
Oh man.
Well, Magical Express.
Like a spectacular.
Magical Express.
Oh.
I kind of thought you'd beat me to the punch.
Oh yeah. Man, I can't believe I didn't mention that one. Not, you're talking about the resort, or
I said Magic
Express. Is that what they're called? Resort Express or Park?
Yeah, yeah. Resort Express.
Express Transportation. Not Magical Express, because that's.
Well, I have the brochure right here. Okay. Express Transportation.
Okay.
Although it has the wrong prices now.
Yeah. So Express Transportation. Now, talk about this one, because this is a value add that you and I have talked about, and I believe at this point, if you're planning on visiting more than one park per day or on the border thinking about visiting more than one park per day, this is a no-brainer value add once you've tried it once.
Yeah. I agree. Express Transportation is a new system. They beta tested back in January. Basically, what it is it provides a direct bus system that goes from one park to the next park. You actually board the bus from inside the park, a location inside the park, and then when you unload at the next park, you unload in the middle of the park. So you never have to go through security again. You basically get on the bus, ride to the new park, walk out in the middle of the park, and you're in the park instantaneously. Once you get past the barriers, you're literally inside the park.
Well, I was just going to say, they did recently raise the price. And what's the new pricing on that? Do you have that handy?
I don't have it handy. It seemed like it went up to, was it 29 for multi-day?
I think that sounds right.
Yeah, it was $24.
While you talk.
Yeah, it was $24 for multi-day. You can do it for one day, and it's fairly reasonable. The nice thing about it is that so you can actually learn the system and really make it work for you. The buses travel every 30 minutes from park to park. Now they'll go from on the 20 from say Epcot to Magic Kingdom, and then on the 30. It'll go to Animal Kingdom, and then on the 10, it'll go to Hollywood Studios. And in each park, one of the parks will run every 30 minutes, and it's 10-minute increments. So literally, the longest you should have to wait would be 30 minutes for a bus. And then the bus, when you get on it, just the sheer speed that you get to your location and then skip all of the get off the bus, go through security, all of that, the amount of time that you save is... it's almost mind-boggling. So,
yeah, I mean, at one point, I used it to go from,
You went and get a backpack, didn't you?
Well, the first time I used it to go from Epcot to Hollywood. Hollywood Studios to Epcot. Yeah, Hollywood Studios to Epcot. I know that because I waited. And the cool thing, I mean, they've done all kinds of little things. So at Hollywood Studios, while you're waiting for the bus, since it might be 20 minutes, they had like rare character meet and greets with no
longer,
just characters hanging out. I mean, I got a selfie with the Evil Queen, who's never out and about meeting people. And there were another half dozen characters out.
The Fox and the Hound.
Robin Hood.
Yeah, it had Robin Hood out there. I mean, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. But we went Epcot to Hollywood Studios in 11 minutes. I mean,
that's crazy.
And it was middle of park to middle of park. So I was next to Spaceship Earth in 11 minutes from Hollywood Studios. Now, I know those parks aren't far apart, but that's still, I mean, I can't walk from the front of the park to where I got in 11 minutes necessarily. All right.
And what did I say? I did it in that.
I'm not that.
I did it in the. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just poking fun at myself. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and I'm trying to remember, we just did a podcast. I think it came out last week. We were talking about it. And if I remember correctly, I went from Hollywood Studios into Magic Kingdom in less than 30, in like 20 minutes.
Yeah, and that's about as far apart as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, it's one end to the other end, 25 minutes. Yeah, it was, it almost takes the old concept of I did four parks in one day. Yeah, whatever. Because it's always, they're going to have an asterisk on it. Did you use express transportation? Because that doesn't count. Because you could do it easily.
Right. And we did look it up. Chad and I confirmed it's $19 for a single day ticket that's valid for the day you purchase it. Or you can get a multi-day for $29 that's good for up to 7 consecutive days.
worth every penny if you're going to park up.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about it in that podcast. You know, I just said, well, I never did see the Tree of Life Awakening. So I just jumped on the express and went over there just to see that. I got there, saw it, turned around, came back, went to the other park. You know, I went from Hollywood Studios after the fireworks there, I think. And then I got on the bus and we went to
Magic Kingdom. Yep.
And didn't we catch the last of the laser projection show or something?
Yep. We caught the end of the Celebrate the Magic or whatever they call it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just not going to do that. It's just not going to happen. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
All right. Well, does anybody have an example of a value-add experience that they would tell people, you know, I know it sounds good, but save your money?
I'll give you one. I don't know if this is exactly what you're thinking, but I did not think the hot air balloon was worth the money at Disney, Disney Springs.
Disney Springs. Okay, interesting. I mean, I don't know that I would consider that quite the same category. That's almost more of I would put it in a category with like fishing excursions and things like that, you know, extra out of park entertainment kind of thing. But
yeah, I included it because it's at Disney parks, but I just thought we did it once and it was a very bumpy ride up. The ticket's expensive and then they want to charge you for a picture on top of it. And it just seemed like a lot of ad for,
right.
You know, basically, you know, you can get onto the top of the Contemporary and see probably just as much. So,
yeah, right. Especially now, don't they have like a mesh cage around the basket?
I think they added something like that. It's even, you know, a little bit. I mean, you have to put your camera through the mesh cage to get an unobstructed picture, right?
right. Okay, so that's one good example. I mean, the classic example, and look, maybe somebody will tell me I'm wrong. No, I didn't actually try it because there was no way I was going to spend the money. But those silly cabanas that they set up inside the parks, they experimented with them in a couple of different parks this past holiday season. I just don't get it. Not for the prices they're asking for these things.
Yeah, and what? Who's going? Really and truly, how much time do you want to spend in a cabana? This isn't a cruise where I want to sit on the beach for half a day. I'm in the parks. I just paid to get into Disney in a Magic Kingdom. I don't want to spend my time sitting in a cabana. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's like
the attractions don't come to you. You got to
exactly
leave.
Well, the only thing I could think of was that if the only reason that you were going into the park as early as you were was because you wanted to be in the park for like the New Year's Eve fireworks, right? And so you knew that even if you didn't want to ride attractions, you were just going to have to stay because it gets so crowded that if you left, you wouldn't get back in, or you might not get back in. And if you got back in, you might not be able to get back to where you wanted to be. Okay, maybe.
I think you may have just found that literally the only reason.
but that makes sense. Works for like one day out of the, you know, 3-week period they had these things set up. I just don't get it. And the problem, here's my biggest problem with it. Most of these value-added experiences, you know, I see people complain about them online, and my response is, so big deal. If it's something you think is silly expensive, don't do it. Nobody says you need to do it. And it doesn't really impact your experience. Because of where they put those cabanas, though, it kind of did impact everybody else's experience. And that's what bothered me about it. They were really, frankly, an eyesore. I mean, I know they were experimental, but come on.
Well, I heard somebody say, well, it might be worth it because my kids want to take a nap and now I don't have to go back to the hotel and everything. I'm thinking, man, if there was a shady motel and they rented it by the hour, maybe that would have been sense. But to pay for rent all day, I mean, so my kid can take an hour nap, that's an expensive nap right there.
Yeah, it is. And I will reserve judgment if the rumors are true and, you know, the eventual destination of these things is up on top of the roof where the Tomorrowland Terrace is, right? Because the rumor is that that's the real intended destination, that they would go up on top.
Yeah, now you have the view.
Exactly. So now you've got a view. Now,
maybe.
At least it's arguable. One time.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Anybody else have an example of one of those that you just look at and you shake your head and you're like, how is it that Disney is actually charging people for this?
Well, I'll add one that doesn't exist yet.
Okay,
but so it's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah, the new Disneyland Max Pass.
Oh, man. That's going to have to be a whole show once we actually know what the rules are.
Exactly. We're still trying to get it all figured out. But in a nutshell, basically, it's you pay $10 a day per person for the ability to make reservation fast passes at Disneyland.
Let's be careful. They're not really quite the same. They're not. We know for sure they're not like Walt Disney World reservation passes, right? Because according to everything we've seen so far, you can't actually make a reservation until you're physically in the park.
Right. Yeah, that's the caveat to it. Yeah, you can make a reservation. Well, that sounds really good. But you can't make them until the day of, and you can't make them until you're in the park. And you can only make, I think, one at a time.
Right, because everything we've seen so far suggests that they're going to be deployed in tandem with paper FastPass.
Right, exactly. They're not eliminating the paper FastPass system. So it just sounds like a convoluted mess. I mean, and like you said, they're not out yet. So we only have a hint as to how it'll all pan out. But I just have tried every way I can think of that it'll pan out and make sense. And I still haven't found a way that it would make sense. I mean, it just, you know, seriously, save your $10.
Yeah.
Go get a Starbucks coffee.
All right. Anybody else have one of those examples of just shaking your head, you know?
I shook my head at the early morning magic.
Okay.
That they offer the Magic Kingdom. You pay for on certain days they had you could pay extra money to get in early for not even 3 hours. It's like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something like that. And they had three attractions open and like a continental breakfast at in Fantasyland.
Right.
And I never did it myself because I couldn't, I couldn't justify it in my head. And
It wasn't cheap, was it? It was pretty expensive, wasn't it?
It was like $70 for an adult and I think just like $10 less for a kid. It was like, I think it was $70, $60.
And it was on top of a ticket.
You would need your ticket and you couldn't, I don't think you could do just the early morning hours. I think you still needed the ticket for that day. Yeah. And it's like, and a friend of mine did it, and cause, she really wanted, her favorite ride is Peter Pan's Flight.
Okay.
And she was like, this is all, I'm just going to ride Peter Pan's Flight for 2 hours straight. Cause it's my favorite ride. And that's all I'm paying this extra money to do. And I'm going to do it for one time and just be able to do that. And the ride was down.
Oh God!
Oh no! One of three rides was down.
One of three rides was down, and like so,
and did they open an alternative ride? I mean, not that she would have cared because she was there for Peter Pan, but
yeah, and as far as I know, they didn't open anything else in its place, and she was told to go to guest services, and she got her money back.
Well, I mean, at least they refunded her. They won't always do that in that kind of a circumstance because they always do warn people that, we can't guarantee an attraction will be up. But
yeah, I think she complained enough that they were.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's another good example. Here's what drives me crazy about that, right? That one, to me, is a missed opportunity. Because all you had to do was make it more like an extra magic hour, right? I mean, just open all of Fantasyland, right? You don't even have to open everything. Just open all of Fantasyland. And now it starts to make some sense.
Right.
A few more attractions, a few character experiences. And
in Fantasyland, those are all slow loading. They're all, that would make real sense.
Right. I mean, what it does is mirror the old, not Magic Morning, the other little morning thing they used to do at Disneyland before they did extra magic hours.
No, I think it was called Magic Morning.
Mickey's Toontown or something, or Toontown something?
No, Toontown opened late.
Yeah. Well, I know. Normally it opens
late. Oh, they would open it early. That's right. You're right. Yeah, what was that called? Oh, my goodness. But yeah, exactly. So you could get into Toontown early.
Yeah.
Back early years of it when it was out.
Yeah. So that, I mean, something like that, that there's an argument for at least. I don't get the limited attractions. It just doesn't make sense.
I think they called it Mickey's Toontown Morning Madness. That's what I just found.
Okay. That
sounds right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Morning Madness. Yep.
And that's exactly what it was. And it was, that starts to make sense, right? Because, it's something that you're going to get the families with small kids who aren't going to last all day anyway. And, you're going to pull them in and help them sort of conquer those attractions that back up time-wise. I mean, there's a lot of argument for it. When it's only three attractions, though, my God, you're really going to charge people $20 an attraction and then a $15 continental, serve yourself breakfast? One bothers me. Most of these things don't bother me. If you don't like it, don't do it. That one kind of bothers me because I feel like they're taking advantage of people. All right. Well, let's end on positive notes, right? So let's do one last round of a good choice, value-added opportunity that's worth the investment in it. And Chad, maybe you'll get us started this round.
Well, I'm gonna switch over to one of the tours that you pay extra for.
Good example.
And the Family Magic Tour at Magic Kingdom is a great thing. It's only $39 a person. Of course, you still have to have a park admission, but for what we're talking about, that's not bad. But it's a nice way to explore the park. They take you on a guided scavenger hunt in a small group. I think there are about 20 people in it. And there's a scavenger hunt, and you get to experience the park and then show you some things and point out things maybe you didn't see. And you get to have fun with a bunch of other people. It's also a nice way to take young kids maybe older parents that don't want to ride the rides but would like to get to see the park, really kind of walk through. So it's a nice... I think it took 2 hours, and they start at like 10 in the morning, so it's like 10 to noon. And then the guided scavenger hunt ends in a, surprise with some special characters, and we just really enjoyed it. I thought that was a nice way to really kind of walk around the park and see things without running from attraction to attraction.
Yeah, and that's a good example of one that kind of fills a niche, right? Because kids can't do the backstage-type tours, so this one's a nice... It's not so long. It's not going to take your whole day, but you can give kids a little peek at that sort of tour experience, without the whole backstage ruining the magic, those kinds of concerns. All right. So Brad, you have another, positive value add for us?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Disneyland and talk about when they had the 60th, they were doing some dining opportunities for you to get good private seating for the Paint Tonight parade.
Yep.
One of them, you could go to Blue Bayou, which is a wonderful one-time experience, overrated restaurant, in my opinion. It's good, but it's just, anyway, but it's expensive. And that particular package, hey, it's great. It gives you a great viewing location, but it's right now they're not doing Paint the Night. They're doing the electrical parade, and it's $65 for an adult, $25 for kids. So it's for the meal. It's a 3-course meal and it's good, but it's still $65. But the one that I want to talk about is the Parade on the Go package from Aladdin's Oasis. And if anybody out there is hearing that and they're thinking, where in the world is Aladdin's Oasis? Exactly. Aladdin's Oasis was a restaurant. It used to be a place where they used to do an Aladdin show in Disneyland. Now, when you go walk by it, you just think it's closed. It's over by the Enchanted Tiki Room. But what's cool here is it's only $25.99 for adults and $14.99 for kids. And I was kind of nervous. I did it for the Paint the Night, and I thought, well, it's going to be box lunches or something, some cheap lunch. And because it was for lunch, but they actually gave you 3 different entrees you could pick. It was lasagna. I can't remember the 3 entrees now, but all I know is three of my family members had each of the different types, and every one of them was really good and full. I mean, big meals. In fact, we ate there. And then boxed it up and took it back to the hotel because we couldn't finish what they gave us. And so for $26, we got a fantastic meal that was completely filling for the main meal for the day and got private viewing for the parade. And the parade viewing was right across from, if you've been to Disneyland, it was right across from It's a Small World, which was cool because it's right where the parade comes out. And literally as the parade went by, it was no more than 8 feet from my feet. I was sitting on a brick wall. So I was sitting up, nobody in front of me. And the parade, the floats were like 8-10 feet away from me as they went by.
That's They're a great huge. Viewing spot. And the best part about that people don't even think about, is that because that's where the parade starts, it also means that if you're doing this with younger kids, you can watch the parade, have the parade get past you, and get gone.
Yep, exactly.
Rather than having to sit around in the hub waiting for the parade to get to you.
Yeah, and the other nice thing there is that if you do want to stick around, then the fireworks fire off. They're to the left of you, so some of the things that are right at the castle you won't see, but all of the up high ones you'll see. But all of the laser projection show they do at Disneyland is on It's a Small World.
Right.
So it's literally right in front of you. And it actually was a very enjoyable viewing point to watch the fireworks too. So I really enjoyed that one. It was definitely the best meal for a private viewing that I've ever done.
Yeah, and I went ahead and pulled up the menu because it's a pretty solid menu. You get your choice of an herb marinated chicken breast with seasonal vegetables, lasagna bolognese, or vegetarian lasagna.
Yes. I had the lasagna, and it was good.
For the kids, they've got spaghetti and macaroni and cheese as well. So, you know, a nice variety of options. It includes your dessert and, you know, a salad. So, yeah, it's a pretty
solid meal.
And
the cool thing is, and it isn't on the go, so you can take it with you if you want. But actually, that is an old restaurant there, even though it's not open, and there are tables there. So you could sit down and eat right there if you wanted, or you can take your meals with you if you want.
Right.
So it was a great deal.
Nice option. So we got a new one from Brad. How about you, James? What's another positive story you've got for us about a good value-added experience that's worth the investment?
You know what? Everything I've had experience with has pretty much been covered. So I'm going to go with something that I dream about.
Okay.
And I think, and this is the VIP tour. Yeah, it's premium VIP tour that you pay like $400 an hour.
Right. Now, here's the key, right? It's $400 an hour with a six-hour minimum.
And, yeah.
But up to 10 people.
Up to 10 guests. So I think this would be perfect for a Diz Dads convention where you get 10 different, you know, solo traveling dads and they're all paying, you know,
cool. James buy-in.
Yeah. It's still $240 a head.
But that's where you get the value. You know, like when you, you know, if I'm paying for my family of four, it's not a value, but exactly. If I'm dealing with nine other people and we're all chipping in equally, then I think you get the transportation access, kind of like you were talking about the express transportation option that you would, you know, that's a good value. You get the VIP seating at the different shows. You just walk right in, skip the lines and rides. So you're getting all these little things that we would pay extra for individually.
And it does include a meal.
And yeah, they have the ones that include, you know, like where they give you lunch and as well. And so you do all this and you put it all together. And I think you'd probably say, yeah, I'd pay this much for this and this much for this part of it. And maybe I pay a little bit for this part of it. I mean, you add it all up. Plus you get the knowledgeable, you know, cast member and it's customized, you know, like you can, I mean, they have the ones that are kind of set with like certain attractions, like the thrill ride one or, you know, the classics.
And those are a little less expensive too.
And those, and you pay a little bit less for those, but then you get that one where you can just kind of customize. You say, like, this is what we want to do, and, you know, and they make it happen for you. And I think, you know, in that certain situation, I think that's something I would like to experience someday.
Yeah, and I mean, that's an example of one that it's probably a once in a lifetime, but it's probably worth it once in a lifetime, right?
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Because the best thing about that one is when they see VIP, because I know somebody that did it, It is VIP. I mean, it's literally, you feel like you should be wearing Ray-Bans and you're from Hollywood. I mean, they just absolutely roll out the carpet and do what pretty much anything you want them to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to throw one out that's actually from Disney Cruise Line that we haven't talked about much. And I'm going to mention the Palo dinner option. It's an adults-only dining experience. It's a value add because, you know, you've already paid for dining when you pay for a Disney cruise, right? They're going to feed you a really nice meal in a really nice restaurant. It's still worth it to pay for that upgrade to Palo. And Remy is another story. It may be worth it, too. I haven't experienced that one. I'll stick with Palo, if only because I think Palo, in comparison, is a fantastic value. Even with the wine pairings, I think we paid a total of, you know, $60 per adult, so about $120. This was not a $120 meal. I mean, if we'd eaten this meal on land, it was easily a $300 meal. And it was fantastic. It was great food. We were a little nervous about doing it because my wife, you know, doesn't eat pork or shellfish. That's a challenge sometimes in an Italian restaurant. To do, you know, really great high-end food and not do pork or shellfish. They had no problem at all accommodating her without pork or shellfish. Everything was outstanding anyway. The wine pairings were spot on, excellent. And, you know, it really is, it's almost, to me at this point, having done it now once, it's almost not a value add. It's just part of the trip. Because it's just too good a value to pass up. It's what you're paying is such a fraction of what it would cost otherwise that I can't imagine not taking that opportunity.
And you don't have to be what I would call a Remy. We've done Remy's. Remy's is a phenomenal, but only if you're a real foodie. If you like to be adventurous and if you, you know, you really want that you know, the Victoria and Albert's kind of an experience. The cool thing with Palo's is it's excellent food, and it is definitely a higher grade. But you know, I don't think you have to have a very, you know, select palate to enjoy Palo's. Right. I thought it was really, really good. Have you done the brunch?
We didn't do the brunch. So that's, I'm looking forward to probably doing that one on the next one. Although I'll be honest, I really kind of enjoy doing the dinner. I think it's a nice kind of relaxing way to wrap up the day. And I'm almost afraid that if we do the brunch, I'm going to, you know, walk out of there. So, you know, they're going to have to roll me out. And at that point, I'm going to have a hard time enjoying the rest of my day.
Yeah, and that is true. I will say for us, if we go on one of the bigger ships and we're going to do Remy's, then we do the brunch. Yeah. But if we're not going to do Remy's, then, yeah, you want to do Palo's dinner because it gives you that special night out
for the adults. And that was the other part about it, too, is that, you know, it's not often when you got two, you know, a teen and a tween that you get to take a nice night out. And so.
And not only do you get to have a night out, but they don't want to spend time with you because they're having more fun than you.
Yes, but right? That's true without the value add experience.
Exactly. This is like, you know, we rushed the first time we did Palo's and thought we better go back and get them from the clubs. You know, they're going to be mad. They're like, go away. Leave us alone.
All right. Is there anybody who didn't get to share another one this round? Chad, did I catch you? I think I started with you. So,
yeah, you started with me this time.
I was just going to say that Palo's the only restaurant I've ever been to where I had to order my dessert first.
Right, right. Well, and it's worth ordering that dessert because that souffle was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, baby.
All right, well, you know, you've heard us talk about our favorite value-added experiences at various Disney parks and resorts destinations. We'd love to hear what you enjoyed and maybe, you know, some warnings that you might have for the rest of us about ones that maybe weren't quite worth what they wanted from you for them. Because it really is all about the experience and sometimes it's worth it to pay a little extra for a little extra experience. So tell us about it. Email us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog, dizdads.com. Tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, or tell us about it on Facebook at facebook.com/dizdadspodcast. And if you've got an extra minute, here's a value add we would appreciate from you. if you could just take a second and leave a review for the show on whatever service you're using to listen to us. We're on iTunes, we're on Google Play, we're on Stitcher Radio. Wherever you're listening, if you could leave a review of the show there, we'd really appreciate it. Having recent reviews helps kind of make the show easier for new listeners to find, and always nice to kind of refresh and broaden the scope of the folks who get to join in with us. So if you could leave us a review, we'd really appreciate it. So until next time, I've been your host, Aaron Rittmaster, with Rad Coates.
Adios.
Chad King.
Good night, everybody.
And James Cameron.
Until next time.